This is a sort of a non-beer. It's not my non-beer recommendation, but it's a corollary, corollary,
corollary,
corollary. Yeah, anyway, whatever. To that.
Sessionable.
Welcome to Sessionable.
Hello.
It's just the two of us tonight.
It's me and Tom.
I actually haven't been on Sessionable for a while.
Yeah.
Last couple of episodes, I was...
It's kind of me and Liam hogging everything recently.
Yeah, so now it's the Tom and Adrian show.
Yeah.
Why don't we quickly start off with what we're drinking?
Yeah. What is this, Tom? This is the one that you brought?
This is the one I brought. It's a weird one. It's one I've had my eye on for a while. It's the Michelin Spontan Carrot. So it's in the Michelin, the Spontan series of beers, which are all... kind of barrel sours, I believe, right? Yep.
Yeah.
And I've had a bunch of them. I've had the Spontan Creek, the Spontan Cranberry. I think I've had the Spontan Framboise, so they're all pretty standard things to put into your sour beers, your cherry, raspberry, even cranberry. This one, Spontan Carrot. Adrian, I'll give you three guesses as to what's in it.
Carrot.
Yeah, they got it in one.
Wow.
Also, there's a big carrot on the label, which I'm not sure if I've ever had a carrot beer.
I've never had a carrot beer in my life.
It says here carrot 3%, which is actually...
What does that mean? Well, is it 3% of the malt bill or something?
Well, yeah. So, in the ingredients, it says water, barley malt, wheat, hops, carrot 3%, and yeast aged in oak barrels. It's weird, but I like it.
I just had a swig and it's pretty good. It's kind of in line sour-wise with their other Spontan series.
Yeah.
Discounting the double series that tends to be a bit more sour, a bit more intense.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Like,
amount
of sourness is not overpowering. You do get a little bit of that carrot flavor as well.
It's a bit savory.
Yeah, but it's not super prominent.
No. But it's prominent enough that you can get it, but I don't know if you gave me this beer and didn't tell me carrot was in it, that I'd pick carrot.
Yeah.
But if you tell me carrot's in it, I'm going to pick carrot, sort of thing. It's been one I've had my eye on for a while. I wanted to try it, and yeah, I thought this would be the right place to try it.
Before we get to talking about anything... thanks to our sponsors, Dave's Brewery Tours.
As always.
For sponsoring us.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard about Dave's Brewery Tours, if this is your first time listening to Sessionable, they are very generous and sponsor us and let us do what we do and let us improve the podcast so it's better for you to listen to. Dave's offers a range of... their main business is brewery tours, as is evident in the name. And offers a range around Sydney's inner west, in Sydney's north, as well as other regions, I think, including Newcastle and Canberra.
And they're expanding to the Hunter Valley.
Yeah.
And Byron as well.
Head to their website. I think it's davesbrewtours.com.au.
Indeed.
And if you do book a tour, which we can recommend... make sure you tell them that we sent you.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's it helps them and it helps us as well to kind of let them know that you found them through us. It means we might be able to get some sponsorship money for next year as well, so we can keep doing awesome stuff with the podcast.
Exactly. Big thanks to our awesome sponsors. Now... I think this episode is going to be one of those episodes where we discuss sort of what's been happening in beer recently.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really done a general episode for a long time. So, we're going to talk about just recent news.
Yeah. Do we start with the big one?
Coopers?
Sure. We can talk about Coopers. Yeah. This is probably a bit of old news when you'll hear this, but it was last month. Coopers got in a bit of hot water.
Yeah.
Over, I think they were maybe a little bit hard done by in the public eye.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it blew up really quickly, and I think, like, as things do these days with internet outrage. There was just a lot of very strong opinions. So what do they actually do, Tom? Tell us about it.
What happened? A few things happened. The first thing that happened is that they released a special edition of their light, their Cooper's Light, which comes in cans. And on the cases of this special edition were verses from the Bible, and it was in collaboration with their partners, the Bible Society, who they have had a relationship with for a long time. That was the first thing that happened. The second thing that was happened, I think a week after that was announced, is a video went up online featuring two Liberal Party MPs drinking Cooper's Light and discussing, and I use that term loosely, marriage equality.
Yep.
And they, in the video, they were drinking Cooper's Light and they were prominently featuring Cooper's Light, and they were saying that the discussion was sponsored by Cooper's Light.
Yep.
That was kind of where it blew up.
Yeah. Whether or not it was, we can't really figure out. Cooper's later said that, you know, they didn't sponsor the discussion. It's a really weird, stupid video.
Yeah. And it was one of those discussions where it's kind of like, it's not necessarily something that needs to be discussed in that way.
It was let's have both sides of this argument, and then not really.
Yeah. So it was one of those things that I think a lot of people found quite frustrating. So that was kind of the big blow up. That's when it got a lot of attention, and a lot of people had internet outrage at Cooper's.
And I think the main point of it was that, you know, they were supporting this organization that in turn were supporting basically, you know, the right for discrimination against same-sex couples.
Yes.
And that's very fair. But at the same time, you know, I will go on the record as saying I don't agree with the views of the Bible Society.
Neither do I, and I don't think anyone on this podcast do.
But they have been supporting the Bible Society for a long time.
Yeah. And they've also, you know, and other things, like they donate to the Liberal Party every year.
Yeah. Whether that knowledge means that you will choose not to drink Cooper's is, you know, up to you entirely. But at the same time, I think it did really blow up because of that kind of internet virality.
Yeah,
that we get these days.
And I think a large portion of the people who were outraged when it happened would, if they went to the pub this week, probably buy a Cooper's. Like, it's, I don't think.
I'm not sure. I'm not so sure because I have had a lot of people come up to the pub, and it's weird because, like, people would come up to me and ask for a beer that, what is very similar to Corona or Extra Dry or something.
Yeah.
And literally the only thing we have that's really watery, bland tasting is Cooper's Clear in a can.
Yeah.
And I would suggest Cooper's Clear. And probably 75% of people say, oh, but we're not drinking Cooper's anymore, are we? And I'm
still.
Like, yeah, they are still saying
really
that.
That's really interesting.
And it's been happening since that whole blow-up happened.
Okay, I haven't been on that side for a bit, so I haven't seen that. That's interesting.
So I think I think they're still feeling the effects of it. Whether or not it's fair, I don't know. Like, I personally am not drinking Cooper's anymore, but I only found out about this whole thing because the internet blow-up happened.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It's weird.
I think it's also probably fair to say, since then, Cooper's has both apologized, and they, as a company, have joined the Alliance for Marriage Equality.
Mm.
It
was actually funny because there was like a kind of, there was a backflip statement, and then there was like a further backflip statement, and then they did a video kind of.
It was a very awkward video.
Yeah.
It was almost Johnny Depp, Amber Heard.
It was very Johnny Depp, Amber Heard in quality.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's a lot to discuss about this. I think
I think what's needed to be discussed about this has been discussed already. But, I mean, I guess some people that listen to the podcast might not have heard of it, so that's why we're bringing it up.
Yeah. I think in other news about large brewing companies putting their foot in it...
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good segue to go to probably who we're going to talk about for most of the episode.
Yeah.
BrewDog, a perennial favorite, and I think it's fair to say that we have a complicated relationship with BrewDog.
Yeah.
On this podcast.
Yeah, and it continues to be more and more complicated the bigger and bigger they get, right? Yeah,
and on one hand, that's understandable. The bigger and bigger they get, the more complicated... I think the relationship's going to get. They used to be a small brewery. They used to be, dare I say, and I say with air quotes, punk.
Punk, yeah.
And the bigger they get, the less that that's possible.
Mm.
But they're still BrewDog.
Yeah.
They still make the same beers that we loved when we loved them.
But they're just becoming a bigger and bigger brewery, and they're acting like a bigger brewery.
Because they need... I mean, they need to, though. They if they want to expand, which they do, they need to get bigger...
Mm.
And that's kind of the way the world works.
So let's go through what's been happening.
There's been a few BrewDog stories that we
haven't really covered yet. So I think the first big piece of news that came our way was, and we heard it from Yeasty Boys basically, that they have stopped letting contract brewers brew at their, or they will stop letting contract brewers brew at their brew house because of, you know, their expanded capacity, which I guess is fair enough.
I think it's fair enough. Like, the thing with contract brewing is, I think as a contract brewer, I don't think you can rely on one brewery to be your only brewery. Like, I know it's hard, but if you're a contract brewer, you've got to understand that brewery, it's their brew house, it's their system.
Yeah.
And if they need that capacity, they take priority. Like,
and you take the, you know, you take the benefit of not having to pay for your own brewer house with a kind of
That insecurity, that risk. It's annoying, and it's it can be a problem for contract brewers. But again, you that's the price you pay for not having your own skin in the game, basically.
And I do feel bad for our friends at Yeasty Boys.
Absolutely, I do.
But I think they know how to, you know, they know how to survive.
I think if anyone knows how to contract brew,
yeah,
it's Yeasty Boys.
So I hope they find a new place in the UK to.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is maybe the amount of notice and lack of certainty, because BrewDog, I'm sure, are a great place to contract brew at.
Yeah,
but can you find someone of the same quality in the right amount of time that you can be certain you've got for a while? That's tough, but I don't necessarily think it's BrewDog's fault.
Yeah, I don't think so as well. I mean, especially... I'm not saying that people should have seen it coming, but I think that it was inevitable with their expansion.
I think the most surprising part of this news for me was that they were still doing contract brewing at their main facility. Yeah.
And I guess the next piece of news that came out was the trademark issue with Lone Wolf.
Yeah, so what happened in this one is there was a pub that trademarked themselves as the Lone Wolf. I think they're just the Lone Wolf. It was the name of their pub.
Yeah.
Which they claim that they came up with before BrewDog registered the exact same trademark for their spirits company.
Yeah, which was 2 years ago, I think.
But the actual trademark... claim was after BrewDog said it. So whether or not they came up with the idea before or after, it doesn't matter. What happened is BrewDog's lawyers then sent a cease and desist to this pub, saying you can't use this name because we have this trademarked. And then the pub made a social media thing of it and said, well, that's not very punk of BrewDog, is it? And I have got to say, as much as I have a complicated relationship with BrewDog, I side with them on this.
I kind of do as well. You know, especially, as we said, a growing company that has trademarks to enforce. You should be enforcing your trademarks.
I think if they were still a tiny company, that they'd be in the right on this. I don't think it's got anything to do with their size. I think the only thing that has to do with their size is the fact that the lawyers sent it off, and that the way that they did it without necessarily talking to the pub first.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think the way that trademarks work is you have to defend them if you want to keep them.
That's right.
If they said to these guys,
yeah,
whatever, you can keep it, then someone else can go, oh, well, Lone Wolf now isn't owned by anyone. I can start something with Lone Wolf, and someone can create another drinks company called Lone Wolf. And if it was in different sectors, different markets, it wouldn't matter, but they're both going to be beverage, you know,
in the drinks market.
So that's just the way trademarks work. And everyone's saying, oh, BrewDog's not very punk for doing that. It's like, well, yeah, sure, they're not, but they're also a business with a trademark that they want to keep.
Yep.
And that's how you keep trademarks. You have to do that to keep them. If you don't do that, you don't keep them. And if you don't keep trademarks, then you're fucked and other people can send you the cease and desist.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have no...
Just a bit of a sidebar. I think it's a weak argument of people to say, oh, that's not very punk of BrewDog to do this and this and that. Because the whole punk thing has been a marketing thing the whole time.
Yeah. The BrewDog aren't punk. They're punk TM.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're... And if you buy BrewDog because you think they're at all punk, like, what are you... Like, no one... But that's their... I think there's two parts to it. First of all, yeah, it's marketing. And second of all, it is a way to describe their business ethos in broad strokes.
Yeah.
It's not to say that everything they do has to be punk. And I don't think I can convey the amount of air quotes I'm using in this discussion.
There are many air quotes.
Pretty much every time I say the word punk, I'm doing air quotes. because BrewDog aren't punk, and they haven't been punk since, like, a year after they opened, basically. Yeah. Like, you can't... They have international distribution.
I mean, pretty much ever since they gained mass media notoriety, they weren't punk. But that's beside the point. Like, I think that's a stupid, weak argument to say of everything that BrewDog does. I mean, I think you should criticize them for approaching, like... So, for this particular case... They did a backflip statement as well, saying, you know, oh, like, we shouldn't have approached it this way.
Yeah, I think they said, our lawyers were a bit trigger happy.
We have invited the Lone Wolf guys to brew a gin with us, distill a gin with us, which is really cool.
Yeah, and they also said, and we offered to basically pay the cost of them changing their name.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But at the same time, I thought it was a bit sus them saying, I can't believe our lawyers were so trigger happy. Yeah, right. Like, you're the director of the company.
Yeah.
You should know everything that your lawyers are doing.
This is all stuff coming from James.
Yeah.
James Watt, who is one of the two faces of BrewDog and probably the more prominent of the two.
Yeah, yeah.
Martin Dickey being the other. And he seems to be the face of the company, and all the company kind of statements come from his Twitter account now, it seems. So, on one hand, I agree with a lot of the criticism about BrewDog. Mm. I think they, for the most part, they make some great beer,
mm-hmm.
and they make a lot of mediocre beer,
mm.
and they rely a lot on marketing stunts. Not just marketing, I think, relying on...
Yeah.
But they rely a lot on stunts to get them notoriety and marketing, which helps them sell beer. And I do agree with that. I think that criticism is absolutely fair. And I think, they used to make better beer than they currently do.
I disagree. I think they make better beer these days than they used to do.
Okay.
Their core range is their core range. Has been their core range, but... I think their special releases have been very fucking good.
Yeah, sure.
Some of them anyway, not all of them, but some of them.
But I think you find that that's been true, mostly true, since they've been a force, at least that we felt in Australia.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, you know, we opened this segment saying that we have complicated relationships with them. I'm still not sure if I am able to put my relationship with them into words.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the beers they do. But I find them a bit frustrating at times.
Yeah.
And I think a good example of this is probably the biggest story about them that's come out.
Yeah. Recently, last few days.
Yeah.
Is that a private equity firm has bought 22% of BrewDog at a value of £213 million.
It's a very punk figure.
Which puts them at over $1 billion.
Yeah.
In value, essentially.
Yeah, which is pretty big news, especially since they have been saying, and they've made a point of it, multiple times, many, many times, saying that they would never let themselves get bought out. Now, to be fair, they're not being bought out. It's a 22% share.
Yep. And it's the second time it's happened.
Yep. And they are still, I think, majority owned by their Equity for Punks shareholders.
Yep.
So they're not being bought out, but they are getting, hey, it's a significant chunk. Both Martin and James's shares are, percentage are dropping quite a bit.
Yep.
From this chunk. Yeah. And I think the biggest part about this that's interesting is when they announced it, they mentioned a couple of key brands that this private equity firm also invested in.
So it was the TSG Group, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
They said a few other brands.
Yeah, they mentioned Vitamin Water and Pop Chips.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, yeah, it's like a pretty big company.
Yeah.
And then what else did they do?
They also are large investors in Pabst Blue Ribbon. Which is pretty anti-BrewDog.
It's a very not punk
yeah.
brand. It's a very mainstream brand that that is known for brewing pretty swilly beer.
Yeah. And it was very interesting that BrewDog did not mention that as one of the brands that TSG invested in when they announced the...
Which you'd think is very deliberate, right?
It's got to be, right? Yeah. Like, this company, we're announcing this company's taken a 22% share in our company. They also invested in another beer company. Let's not mention it.
Yeah.
Which, again, and that's maybe a bit cynical.
A little bit.
But as we've said, like, we have complicated relationships with BrewDog.
Yeah.
You know, we can be cynical about them and their business practices while still loving some of their beers.
And I guess it's up to consumers to make that decision to whether or not to support this company that is maybe not acting like they would prefer, but it is important to kind of to know all the facts.
I agree.
And I guess it's the same thing with Coopers as well. Like, bringing it back to Coopers, you know, acquaint yourself with all the facts and make the decision based on that.
Yeah, keep it light.
Oh God.
we'll take a quick break.
On that note, let's take a break.
Sessionable.
Now, we're drinking just something pretty average, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's no 2015 Mountain Goat Barrel Breed Barley Wine.
No, that's because it's the 2016.
2016, yeah.
Yeah. Which is delightful.
It's pretty good, yeah. It's traveling really well.
I actually find it a lot lighter than I was expecting it to be.
It is like... I do remember it being lighter than the 2015, but I also... I think it's tasting better than when I had it probably almost a year ago when it first came out.
It is still 11.3%.
Yeah. So Mountain Goat recently came out with the 2017 edition, which they are saying is back to the original recipe.
Okay.
With the one exception of they're using Starwood barrels instead of Lark barrels.
Sure.
And yeah, the 2015 edition with the Lark barrels won the IBA Best Beer Award, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
The 2016 is also Lark, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that 2017, actually, because the 2015 was amazing.
Yeah, I don't get a lot of barrel character from this.
Not too much, but they only age it for 2 months, I believe, which I think is good because sometimes you can get...
A bit too much. Yeah.
And I like that in certain cases, but I think it works in this type of really kind of malt-heavy beer.
Sure.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's tasting really nice.
Awesome. Should we head to recommendations? Or wait,
before we go to recommendations, all right, well, let's another piece of news that came out recently, to the rejoice of... lefties everywhere.
Yeah.
Is Bob Hawke came out with a beer.
Yeah. I think it's served exclusively in yard glasses And you can only drink it in a certain amount of time, right?
You can only only drink it if you're Bob Hawke.
I
think.
No, so there's a beer called what? It's Hawke's Lager, I think.
Hawke's Lager,
which I'm surprised it hasn't happened already. But again, I'm a bit cynical.
Yeah.
As a lefty.
Yeah.
As a lefty, I do find it a bit. There's a little bit of that kind of hypocritical, oh, there's this icon of the left, let's put his name and face on a logo to sell more stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'm cynical about is the fact that I think in all the articles about the beer, it says that Hawke's Brewing Co. was thought up by two advertising executives on a plane between New York and Sydney, and that's the biggest kind of flashing red light going, keep away. That's, you know, it's a bit.
I'm actually not super surprised at that, tidbit of information. That said, I haven't had the beer, so I can't really judge it. Apart from its origins. It's only available exclusively to certain venues per state, I believe.
Currently. So, the opening was to the first 11.
The Hawke's 11, yeah.
The Hawke's 11. Yeah. So, 11 pubs got it.
Are they sticking to 11 pubs at any one time?
I think the plan is for it to expand.
Yeah.
My problem with this, and I think I've said this before about other brands, similar brands, it's a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
I don't see this having any legs. I don't see it having any longevity.
I think the worst thing about it is that, you know, it's fine for them to enjoy success, you know, good on them, but it is also an insult to the brewers that have so much passion in this industry who, you know, maybe not necessarily were in it for the money, but were in it for the product.
Yep.
And this is the exact opposite of that. So, you know, it's kind of shit, but it is what it is.
The other thing about it is, so they claim that all profits, apparently, I think it was their claim, all profits go to Landcare.
Oh, okay.
And I have heard things to the contrary.
Okay.
So I don't know, that if what I've heard is true.
Yeah.
That makes me pretty upset, but I don't know. I'm just cynical. We've seen enough of these contract brew brands that are thought up by advertising executives, and some get some market traction, a lot don't, but all of them basically make it harder for other people in the industry to do anything. It's frustrating. And I'm cynical about their motives, and I'm cynical about them, and I think that it is also ultimately a cynical exercise, putting a beloved Australian figure on a label just to sell beer.
Mm. Can I seg straight into my beer recommendation?
Let's go. Yeah.
Also a really...
It's not Hawke's Lager, is it?
No, it's also a really well-marketed beer, I think. Well-marketed, well-branded, made by somebody that is passionate about the brewery, the beer industry. And it comes from a friend of the show, Sam Foose.
Yes.
The awesome. Filter XPA.
Yeah.
And you and I had this beer at the Canberra Beer Festival.
Yep.
Shout out to the Canberra Beer Festival, which was really fucking fun a few weeks ago. And yeah, it's just a really super easy drinking, tasty, light-ish XPA. I hate the term XPA. But it's a really good...
It's XPA's world now, yeah. Adrian. We're just living in it.
It's a good sessionable pale ale. Session IPA, as I like to call it.
Yeah. Sessionable.
It's just... it just hits all the right notes in terms of beer. Really good tasting. I think it'll do well because it's really well branded.
It's got a really nice kind of retro,
old school,
70s sort of brand to it.
Yeah. And made by a really great legend of the craft beer scene.
Absolute legend.
In Australia. So, yeah, shout out to Filter. Hopefully we can get her for an episode in the near future.
Well, I think that's on the cards.
Yeah.
My beer recommendation is a beer that I have been drinking a lot recently until my local bottle shop ran out of it, and now I'm hounding him to get more.
Yeah.
So it's Barossa Valley Brewing.
Yep.
Their chocolate and coffee stout.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about this beer.
Which I just love.
Yeah, I haven't had it yet. Is it in cans now?
It is in cans. So I've been buying it from my local bottle shop, Medhurst and Sons.
Yep.
By friend of the show, which is owned and operated by friend of the show, Kieran Allen.
Yep.
And it's a great little bottle shop that specializes in craft beer tinnies. And I was buying a bunch of that, and then I came in one day and there was none left, and Kieran's like, yeah, some guy came in and bought a case of it. And I was like, how could you let him do that? How dare he? And now I haven't been able to get some for a while.
You're just sad that you didn't think of it earlier.
Yeah, I know. I honestly, when he gets it back in, I might. Yeah. I love it. It's sweet. It's not super sweet, though.
Okay.
It's got a nice kind of roasty coffee bitterness to it. But it is along the lines of the sweet stouts that I like, you know.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of certain sweet stouts. They can't be too sweet, but when they've got a nice kind of balance or a sort of layered flavor profile, that's when I'm just... That's catnip to me. I will... Yeah. So that's my beer recommendation.
Cool. My non-beer is, as is very common for me, a video game. And it is a game called Ghost Recon Wildlands. And it's not a very good game, but it has a lot of really fun bugs. And it's co-op.
Okay.
So if you play it with another player and you have voice chat on, you just lose your mind at the stupid shit that happens in this game. Yeah. So what was your recommendation?
My recommendation is a podcast, as I guess is one of my...
usuals.
Regular things to recommend. I was going to recommend a video game, but you did, so I'll do something a bit different. But the podcast I'm going to recommend is called The Adventure Zone.
Okay.
Which is a D&D podcast. So it's, as I said, the McElroy brothers. Who are kind of podcast personalities and...
Are they actually brothers?
Yeah.
Okay, they are actually brothers.
So there's three of them that are brothers.
Yep.
So on the Adventure Zone, you've got... three of them who are brothers, and their dad is the other person. So one of them is the DM, and then two of his brothers and his dad are the player characters.
Yep.
And they're just coming to the end of their first campaign.
Yep.
And it's really, really good.
Okay.
I absolutely recommend it.
How many episodes has it been so far?
Quite a few.
Okay.
I think it's like six arcs. Each arc is about six episodes.
Okay, that's not too bad.
So it's not too bad. Something like it might be more than that. I only just recently started listening to it, and I've burnt all the way through it, finished it, and then paid to become a Max Fun donor to get extra episodes of it. I'm absolutely in love with it.
Yeah, cool.
So I do recommend it. If you've never listened to anything they've done before, which I hadn't before I started listening to The Adventure Zone, I'd recommend starting with, I think it's episode 1.5, which is kind of an edited down version of the first episode.
Right.
And then if you're into it, go back and listen to the first episode in entirety later. But a lot of the first episode is full of in-jokes that I didn't really understand.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a barrier to me. But then once I got past that, I loved it. I'm a D&D nerd. I love D&D. Those are my recommendations.
Awesome.
I think that probably brings us to the end of this episode.
Yeah.
We do apologize for not being super regular recently. As we said, Liam's overseas with our equipment, and it's
all of our schedules pretty much have been clashing.
It's been a bit rough, but we will definitely try to.
We will make up for it.
Yeah, especially when Liam comes back, it'll be a bit easier to get a bit more regular with recording, and we'll try and go back to our fortnightly schedule that that we like doing. We like doing it on that time scale.
It's fun.
Yeah. But thank you for tuning in and listening. And as always, we would really appreciate it if you told your friends about us, if you think they like beer podcasts, and if you go to iTunes and rate and review us. That does help us get more listeners. It helps people find us on iTunes, which is always good.
Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Dave's Brewery Tours.
Absolutely.
We love them so much.
And we couldn't do what we do without them.
And we're looking forward to, Dave's representative being back, Liam.
And we keep saying this, but we do have some really cool things lined up for this year. I think this is going to be a really good year for Sessionable.
Yep.
Awesome.
Cool. See ya.
See you later.